At council, any questions about our procedures?
Nope.
And we're prepared to proceed whenever you are.
May it please the court, counsel, I'm Lane Cohen for the appellant. 55558. Your honor, I attended a workers' compensation CLE seminar where a member of this court actually appeared and addressed the attendees and told us that this court reverses or remands workers' compensation decisions from the ALJs only about 10 or 11% of the time. And the reason given at that seminar was because of the broad discretion given to the ALJs below. And typically, we were told that this court will only reverse or remand if there's a clear error shown. That is what we have here today. My goal at the ALJ hearing below was not just to generally show that Mr. Buckley contracted a condition in the course of arising out of his employment, but specifically to prove by preponderance of the evidence that Mr. Buckley's decision or attempt to stop smoking conferred a benefit, a direct, clear financial benefit to the employer. Now, that was proven beyond a preponderance of the evidence, certainly by 100% of the evidence, by these kind of statements. Did the company's decision to institute a wellness program and encourage employees to stop smoking have a financial benefit to the employer? Answer, yes. Did this have a dual benefit? Was the attempt to stop smoking, did it benefit Mr. Buckley and benefit the employer by lowering health insurance rates for the employer? Answer, yes. Did you do this as a cost-saving measure? Answer, yes. The employer actually showed a video of his actual presentation to the employees talking about how his health insurance rates were going up year after year, and he had to do something. So here's what they suggested they do. We're going to come up with this program. We're going to encourage employees to stop smoking. And for every employee that stops smoking, they're going to get a benefit. They're going to supposedly get healthier. They're going to be better employees because they're healthier. And they're going to save a 20% premium on the amount they contribute to the health insurance premiums. Likewise, the employer benefits because their company tells them their rates will go down if they have fewer employees who smoke.
I ask you, go ahead, Judge.
Certainly.
Mr. Cohen, I wanted to ask you a question. It seems to me that there's a disconnect between what you're saying and the fact that the employer testified at the hearing that he didn't, or that the company didn't, in fact, implement the stop smoking program. What is your response to that?
Your Honor, the employer did implement the stop smoking program.
Didn't the president of the company testify that they didn't implement the program because of various difficulties in monitoring its implementation?
The court may be correct about that. I don't recall exactly, but the time frame of this was that at the end of 2008, the speech that the company president made to the employees happened at the very end of 2008 in December. And the company president said, if you need help stopping smoking, use our health insurance and go to a doctor. Mr. Buckley did that in December of 2008. He was prescribed Shantax right away. Then he held off for about a month before he took the drug because he wanted to try to stop on his own. And then in early February 2009, he took the drug and was afflicted with this problem. Now, it could be that after that, the employer decided not to implement the program, but he hadn't decided not to implement it when Mr. Buckley had already taken the drug. Again, I'm unsure of the company really saying that, but if they did, it was after the fact.
I don't recall. I think you attached the hearing transcript to your brief, and I don't recall that there was any testimony one way or the other about when the company president decided not to implement the program or when he advised employees that he wasn't going to implement the program. Is there anything elsewhere in the record that would shed light on that?
I don't believe there is, Your Honor. It was not actually addressed, as I recall, by counsel for the insurance company. They actually attacked the claim from an entirely different angle and didn't focus on that. It may have come up in something the company president said later, that, oh, eventually we didn't implement the program, but I think that was long after Mr. Buckley had already taken the drug, in expectation that the program was in existence.
Let me ask you,
Certainly.
Mr. Cohen, how does this arise out of the employment? I mean, I understand that the employer was a motivating force here, or at least that's your argument, but the duties that your client had to do, how does stopping smoking, how does this particular injury arise out of his employment?
Your Honor, this is one of those cases that is more difficult to analyze than, oh, I just been over to pick up a box and my back snapped. This is when we get into these multi-pronged tests from the various cases that apply the various factors of a case. I've got one now with a lady who decided to volunteer to take some secret Santa gifts from the building that she was in out to her car and then drive the car over to the annex where they're having the party. Nobody told her to do it. No one asked her to do it. It wasn't part of her job description, but it's a compensable claim because she did it in the course of and arising out of her employment. It was for the benefit of the employer. And that's where we get down to the clear error.
I'm sorry, if I can interrupt you, Mr. Cohen, I'm on the same page as my colleagues here, I suppose. I recognize there are a number of factors, as you say. Price lists various factors, and benefit is one of them, one of six, I think, or maybe seven. How do you distinguish Price in this case? In Price, as I recall it, and correct me, at least one of there was consolidated cases, and one of them involved a police officer. The police officer was told, instructed by her supervisor, you got to get in shape. And you know, that was an order. And she goes home and she gets hurt exercising, and the Supreme Court said that did not arise out of her employment. Here it seems like, you know, this was encouraged. It certainly wasn't a requirement that Mr. Buckley stopped smoking. So, you know, it seems to me Price would be the stronger case for arising out of employment. The Supreme Court said that wasn't good enough. So how do you, just now factually, how do you distinguish Price?
I think, Your Honor, the appellant's entire position today rests upon this proposition. Whether the court below applied Price or applied a different multi-pronged test, the ALJ must plug in correct facts into that analysis. And if he does not, he's using an incorrect fact and it taints the analysis and it results in an inherently defective decision. You can't take, the ALJ can't say, I'm taking facts 1 through 6. I'm applying it to this multi-pronged test, and I come out with a result that says the claim should be denied. He cannot do that if he applies an incorrect fact. Now, our position today is really to say this to the court. We proved, not just by a preponderance of the evidence, but by 100% of the evidence, that this decision, an attempt to stop smoking, was of a benefit to the employer. That's the fact the ALJ had to apply to whatever test he wanted to use, whether it be Price or another case. If he didn't, then his decision is defective. And what we're asking the court to do today is really focus on that small issue and remand this case to the ALJ with this instruction. Decide this case with this fact that the claimant below did prove that his attempt to stop smoking was of a direct benefit to the employer, and then apply whatever multi-pronged test he wants to and come out with every decision he wants to, because our position today isn't that this case is automatically compensable if it's proven that Mr. Buckley's attempt to stop smoking was a benefit to the employer. It isn't, because the ALJ could have found it to have been a benefit to the employer and still found a reason to deny the case, which could be upheld. Our decision is it's inherently defective to apply an incorrect fact to a multi-pronged test. And I would like to reserve any other time, please.
Okay, thank you. Not sure who will be arguing on the appellee side.
Hey, please, court. I'm Harvey Flewelling, registration number 22605, representing Respondents Advanced Circuits Incorporated and Pinnacle Assurance. At council table is Lee Hegner, registration number 42, I believe, who represents the Industrial Claim Appeals Office.
Will Mr. Hegner be arguing as well?
I'll do the argument. That's our plan.
Thank
Mr. Hegner is available if you have any questions for him from his perspective.
Thank you.
Essentially, the claimant is ignoring the six factors. I'm sorry, the five?
Five.
The five factors of the Price case.
I added one. My fault. I apologize.
Certainly focusing on the factor of whether there's a benefit conferred on the employer as a result of this wellness program. And that is certainly one of the factors. Here, the ALJ made a fact finding that any benefit to the employer was speculative or theoretical at best, in part because the program was not actually implemented by the employer. And I believe, Judge Taubman, you're correct. The transcript of the hearing does not indicate when it was determined that this program was infeasible or not feasible. And there was nothing that indicated when the employees were advised of this decision. I believe there was a video introduced in evidence and played before the ALJ where they discussed, this was the December 2008 conference, and I believe there's evidence in that video that this program was supposed to be implemented in April of 2009.
Is there any other evidence in the record, Mr. Flewelling, that would indicate when the company president decided not to implement the program?
There's none that I'm aware of. There's nothing in the testimony by the company president. He was never asked that question.
It would seem that it would be difficult for Mr. Buckley to establish reliance on a program if we don't know when it was, when he and presumably other employees were told that it wasn't in fact going to be implemented.
I agree, Judge. And I'm surprised that question wasn't asked at the hearing, but I did make a search for that to see if that piece of evidence was in there, and I did not find it. So from the perspective of the employer and the insurance company, we agree with the analysis of the Industrial Claim Appeals Office. The ALJ cites the Price case and makes its fact findings, and the fact finding regarding whether there was a direct benefit or any benefit to the employer, that's a question of whether that finding is supported by substantial evidence in the record. And we have the testimony of the company president, who basically, contrary to what Mr. Cohen has argued, there's no evidence where the employer said, yes, we're getting a direct benefit from the employees attempting to quit smoking. He testified there was a dual purpose. One purpose was improving the general health of the employees, and the other one was cost containment. But there was no specific evidence that this cost savings might inure to the employer directly. It may be something that it's just as feasible that could have been passed on to the employees. Employers do that all the time. But that's just one of the factors in the Price case. And you look at all the other factors, whether the injury occurred during working hours. That didn't happen here. Whether it occurred on the employer's premises. The claimant conceded. He was at home. He took the Chantix. And it was not on company time. The other factor, whether the employer initiated the exercise program or the wellness program. Well, the evidence, the findings of the ALJ was obviously the employer encouraged the employees to quit smoking in order to take advantage of this program that never was implemented. But at the same time, the ALJ also found that this was not mandatory. It was not a condition of employment. It was merely encouraged, and employees would not be penalized by failing to quit smoking. It was merely an incentive program that would have provided a 20% discount on health insurance premiums for employees who quit smoking. But again, the program was never implemented. The fourth factor, whether the employer exerted any control or direction over the exercise program. No, the evidence and the ALJ's findings were no one directed the claimant to go to his personal physician. No one directed him to take the Chantix. Merely, there was an encouragement to quit smoking. Then the fifth factor is whether the employer stood to benefit from the program, which we've pretty much discussed in full. And the Price Court did say that factors one or two are the particularly strong indicators of whether the injury arose out of it in the course of employment. And those two, as we've, it's uncontested that the injury occurred outside of the employer premises and the working hours. And if you look at one of the main case that the claimant relies upon, the Detertz case, that involved, if I'm recalling correctly, a newspaper delivery boy who, because there was vandalism to bicycles at the school, he asked the newspaper if he could store his bike on the premises of the employer. The employer agreed. And the boy was hurt riding the elevator after leaving his bike off before school on the employment premises. And the court there found that, I believe that the bike essentially was an integral part of his job duties of delivering newspapers, and the employer stood to benefit by the fact that the claimant there could use the bicycle to deliver the papers more quickly. So it's the use of the bicycle and the injury had a direct relationship, direct causal relationship with the duties of employment. Here we have a claimant who works on circuit boards, and the attempt to quit smoking is not, has no relationship to those duties or functions of employment. So if you're looking, the claimant acknowledged in his brief, and the case law is, you look at the totality of the circumstances. The Price case gives you the five factors, and really the only factor that the claimant is arguing here is this benefit to the employer issue, which the ALJ did make a specific finding, and it's certainly a reasonable inference from the evidence for him to make that finding. There's conflicting evidence on the issue, and the ALJ has that discretion to resolve those conflicts, and substantial evidence in the record supports that finding.
Well, it's interesting on that, Mr. Flewelling. The ALJ found there was no persuasive evidence showing what benefit, other than as a possible way to lower premiums if the losses to the carrier decreased. So it seems like the ALJ acknowledged the employer's desire to lower premiums. So I'm just curious, in Detertz, the court said when the employer gets some benefit, the Employees Act can't be viewed as wholly personal and unrelated to employment. So just in terms of play devil's advocate here for a minute, I mean, if you look at Detertz, you take that statement on its face. The ALJ here suggested there was at least a possible lowering of premiums. You know, isn't there some evidence that there is at least some possible benefit to the employer here? I mean, that's where this kind of motivated from.
I think it's certainly possible, and I think the ALJ considered that possibility, but he said it was too tenuous. It was speculative and theoretical, and in the end, there was no benefit to the employer. I'm not sure when the Detertz court uses the word related, I'm not sure if they're in what context that's being used. Certainly, the quitting of smoking, based on the encouragement of the employer, there's some relationship. Is it a causal relationship? Is that the cause of the injury? Does that bring it the duties of employment in as the cause of the injury? And the ALJ found no, it doesn't. It was too speculative.
Now you did use the phrase duties of employment as opposed to here the mutual benefit. How important is it that it have relationship to the duties of employment?
Well, I think the Detertz decision makes that paramount. In that case, the bicycle was directly related to his duties. He used that to deliver the newspapers more quickly, even though the employer didn't require the use of it. The employer acquiesced in storing the bicycle on the premises. The boy was injured on the premises.
But is that a requirement? I mean, it's one thing to say that in deterrence, that was a factor that moved the decision to say it was related. But it's not a required factor, is it?
In the Price case, the factors, I don't think any one is particularly required. I think it's more of a balancing test, other than balancing with factors one and two being more important, according to the court. So
if it related to his duties, it would be a stronger case for Mr. Buckley, but the absence of its connection to his duties does not destroy his case.
I think that's absolutely correct.
Okay.
If there are no further questions, I think that's all I have. Just request that you affirm the Industrial Claim Appeals Office.
Thank you, Mr. Flaring. Mr. Cohen, you've got 5 minutes and 53 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor.
So, Mr. Cohen, here's my concern. I mean, we have the Price factors, and we have the court telling us in Price the factors one and two are of the greatest weight, that is, during working hours on the premises. We also have factor number four, which relates to exerting control and direction. And certainly in this case, if the employer had said, and whoever goes to this particular doctor and follows the regimen ordered by that doctor, that certainly would be very strongly in your favor. But I don't know, I don't think there's anything like that in this case, which then brings it down to, you know, two factors that are remaining, whether the employer initiated, in that case, the exercise program, here, the quit smoking program, and whether the employer stood to benefit. Now, you're putting a lot of weight on stood to benefit, but that's not going to get you all the way there. So why can't we decide right now on this record, based on the ALJ's findings, that based on the Price factors, you just didn't get far enough?
Your Honor, had the ALJ taken all the factors that you just mentioned, and they were all correct factors that were uncontested in the record, and weighed them and said, I believe this case should be denied or even approved, you were right. There's no basis for appeal. But our position is one of the factors that he used, whether in that analysis or any other, was not a fact of the case.
And this is benefit?
Benefit analysis.
All right. So
benefit conferred. Now, I listened before, and I knew this was coming, of course. The ALJ said that this benefit was speculative and theoretical. Now, there is 100% of the record, and I'm going to give you a couple of quotes right now, that supports the opposite. There is no speculation. There is no theoretical benefit. It was established. There's no room for interpretation that these comments or answers to questions were theoretical or needed some sort of other analysis. For example, the company president says on page 33 of the transcript, again, it's one of our cost containment measures we were asked from the insurance company. On page 33 of the record, question, and this was a cost containment idea? Answer, and benefit to the employee to quit smoking, both. Question, so it had a dual purpose? Answer, yes. Now, again, there are other various comments like that, again, from the human resources director as well. They openly, clearly admit they did this. It was their idea to do it, not because they felt bad for the employees and wanted to help them. This was their cost containment measure. This was how they were going to save money. And how can the ALJ take this uncontested evidence and say, well, this benefit was only theoretical? How is that theoretical? Our point today is that this was proven. This fact was proven. The ALJ could not say it was theoretical. It's not possible to say it's theoretical.
But the ALJ did, Mr. Cohen, go on and say there was no persuasive evidence showing benefit other than as a possible way to lower premiums. So it seems to me that the ALJ acknowledged that, take that as a given. I mean, the only way to read that sentence is that the ALJ is saying that's the benefit, and then the ALJ weighs it and comes out against your client.
Your Honor, I read that too, and it sounds like a non sequitur. It sounds like he says it's a benefit, but it's not a benefit. I don't understand what that means. And I also wanted to address this business about the cost-contained program not being implemented, because I hadn't thought of that before today. But the evidence and the timeline is that this was presented to the employees December of 08. Mr. Buckley decided to go ahead and do it. His testimony at the hearing, again uncontested, was that he did this in response to the company's encouragement to do it. He didn't have to do it. It was voluntary, but he did it in response. So I think it follows that there's no evidence in the record to show that this program was discontinued or not implemented before Mr. Buckley decided to go ahead and do it. So his intent was to do this. His intent was to help himself, and ironically, it had the opposite effect because he came down with this horrible illness. But his attempt to stop smoking, from his perspective, was to help himself, and it had an absolutely clearly defined benefit to the employer. And the ALJ saying the only benefit to the employer was a cost containment measure is exactly the point. That's what the benefit was.
But it was undisputed that this did not happen on company time, on company premises. It was undisputed that the company did not direct him to take the Chantix.
That's correct, Your Honor. It's undisputed. And those are some of the factors that are weighed. Sometimes one factor takes precedence over the other and is weighed more heavily. But in order to come to a correct analysis, you must weigh the correct facts, or you must weigh the facts. And that a fact that does not exist in the record.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cohen, Mr. Fluelli, Mr. Hegner. Thank you all for your briefs and arguments in this case. The case will stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course. That concludes our docket for today. The court will be in recess, and the bailiff may so announce.